This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, and maybe with you on the phone at 1-800-462-7413. Through the hour, Zorba here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. Again, 800-462-7413. Zorba, some interesting research again.
Yes, we're going to talk about birth order and IQ. Are firstborn children really smarter than the rest of the lot?
That one's been in the news. What else happened?
And we're going to talk about who gets diabetes as children and who do not. Essentially, does ethnicity play a role in risk? And what about preconception about who is at risk? Because our children are getting heavier and heavier and more likely to get diabetes.
Interesting stuff coming up. And we have a listener recipe and our listener, Marie Baker, will be here in the studio to prepare.
Absolutely. This is going to be a great recipe. We are going to talk to Marie, and it is Marie's chocolate tofu ice cream. I have never had her tofu ice cream. I have had commercial tofu ice cream called Tofuti, which is not made with dairy product. It's a wonderful, wonderful taste. We'll see what Marie's
tastes like. I'm so mixed emotions on this. I love ice cream, and of course, you know how I feel about tofu.
I know, Tom. You may change your tune.
We'll hope you'll stick around for the medical myth buster, too, coming up a little later in the hour. Again, 800-462-7413. Zorba, a listener with us now in O'Fallon, Illinois. Hi.
Hi, how are you all doing?
Fine. How can we help you?
Well, my wife is an anesthesiologist with the Air Force, and we are being sent to Germany for a 3-year vacation.
Oh, how nice.
And your producer actually said that you guys were going to come and help pack. So I'll be happy to pick you up at the airport. Just give me a ring.
Okay, wait by the phone.
I'll be waiting. I'll be waiting. In fact, I won't start without you. How's that?
That sounds great.
Well, you guys were talking about calcium recently, and it brought to mind a question that I had about drinking water in Germany. Mm-hmm. Apparently, they will not give you tap water. You have to buy water, and of course, they want you to drink beer because that's all they have there.
Wait a minute. They must have water when you must be able to turn on a tap and water comes out.
Well, yeah, they actually have running water, but they won't let you drink it.
My goodness. They say
that it's too high in calcium. And I'm taking calcium supplements, so I wonder, why is the calcium bad for you? And the humorous part that I have heard from numerous sources is that they'll usually tell you this while they're smoking a cigarette and blowing the smoke in your face. They're really concerned about your health, but maybe not in the correct way.
Right, not in the correct way. That is a humorous part. Well, there is nothing wrong with calcium in water. I mean, hard water contains minerals in it. There's nothing wrong with calcium. It doesn't affect blood pressure. It's not in any potable, meaning drinkable, water system in the U.S., in Europe, or in other developed countries. There really is nothing wrong with having some calcium in the water supply. Now,
okay.
I'll tell you something interesting. When I was a child, I went to visit my grandmother. She moved to California. And when she moved to California, I was told, you can't drink the water in Los Angeles. It's in the desert and it's awful. And everyone had these great big bottled water, you know, like water coolers.
Sure.
And if they had children in the house, they fluoridated it so much that it tasted like it was medicinal. And they thought that this was good for children to have. And in the end, it turned out to turn the teeth brown. A lot of children in California had brown teeth because they had too much fluoride in the water. So this whole thing is hype, absolutely hype. The water supply in Germany is just fine. You're right. They want you to drink their beer. That's really what it is. But they don't want their children to drink their beer. So, you know, when you're on the reservation, military reservation in Germany, you can drink it one way or another. How long now? You're going to be there for
three years.
Yes.
And your wife's an anesthesiologist. What are you going to do there?
I'm the Mr. Mom.
You're the Mr. Mom.
Three kids and another one on the way.
Three kids and one in the cooker, in the oven.
Oh. Been there, done that. Got the T-shirts, and the T-shirts are still stained.
Well, you should have a great time. Have you been to Europe before with your kids or traveling with your wife?
I've never been there.
Oh, it'll be a wonderful time.
Well,
wonderful
it's going to be an experience. You know, the cigarette smoke is the only thing that...
Well, that is a big issue. Germany does not yet, to my knowledge, have a rule like Italy does, shocking, and France does, shocking, that you can't smoke in public places. So you can't smoke in any restaurant and any bar in Italy, and soon to be the same in France. And in the U.S., of course, we do it state by state.
Right.
We should get rid of all smoke in all public places in the U.S. Germany doesn't do that. And it is interesting. They might talk about the water with the calcium and blow smoke in
now,
your face.
Later on in the program, we're going to talk about a study on IQ and birth order. Is your eldest the smartest?
Yes, indeed, but I'm not sure if it just has to do with her being 3 years ahead of the program, and also whether it's that she got more attention as well.
Okay. Now we have a second question. Are you Norwegian?
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay. That's all we wanted.
The study was a Norwegian
That's
study.
That's right. Uh-huh. Yeah, the study was a Norwegian study.
No, my wife
study.
Might have Scandinavian blood, but not me.
Hey, have a good time in Germany and
good
drink
luck.
Water.
All right. Thank you very much. Yeah. Have a great day.
Bye-bye. 800-462-7413. Zorba, let's talk about birth order.
Yes, let's talk about birth order in Norway. Now, we all know that any study that's a Norwegian study must be true. I mean, everyone knows that, right? A study done in Norway has to be
the highest scientific value
and has to be...
We can extrapolate. If something works in a study in Norway, it might very well work in the United States or in Spain or in Brazil or anywhere else.
How can you accuse me, moi, of possibly being smart alecky with the Norwegian study? But this is a very interesting study.
Yeah.
Now, first of all, part of the issues are in Norway. All the information is open. You know, in the U.S., we've got privacy standards, and in Norway, they don't. So they don't have the same privacy standards that we have. And so they look at IQs, and we'll talk about the IQ test. But it's
right.
a Sanford-Binet IQ test. And what they found was, quote, that children who were number one in the family tended to have a two to three point difference in IQ, the standard IQ being 100, and the firstborn might have 103.
Yeah.
And the secondborn might have 100.
So the eldest is the smartest.
The eldest is the smartest.
By 3 points.
But we have to look at this in detail. Let's look at the pro side. The pro side is, you might say, what's 3 points? But for some people, the 3 points, especially if they're marginal, mm-hmm. might be the difference between functioning or not functioning. It might be the difference between maybe getting a job or not getting a job, being a little bit quicker, you know, quicker on the memory or not. That 3 points may mean something.
Yeah.
But on the con side, you know, IQs are really difficult to measure. The idea was that when it was initially developed 100 years ago, maybe mm-hmm. you could give the test in fourth grade or fifth grade and actually predict who was going to be smarter later on. And they're notoriously poor. For instance,
yeah.
in fourth grade, I had an IQ test, and my mother was very, very sad because she got the number when I got home, and my IQ, according to the IQ test in fourth grade, was 78. So I am submarginal. Now, that meant to my mother that I would be lucky to graduate high school.
Must have cheated your way through medical school somehow.
Who knows?
How did you do that?
Who knows? Diane Rosner had the highest IQ, and Diane Rosner never did much in her life. And she had the highest, to my knowledge. I mean, I've lost track of her. And she had the highest IQ of 132 next to Daniel Melky, who had 130, and Daniel never went on to college. But moi, with an IQ of 78, I've been really, really lucky. So, you know, can you really predict that? But that's the other part of this, is that these tests, to some extent, are also, one part you may say, well, maybe it's real, and the other part is maybe it's shenanigans. But, you know, that's my take is it's
kind
of.
But they do have some reasons why they say that the eldest tends to be the smartest.
Yeah, Name them. How can
I
count the ways?
Well, if you're the older kid, you tend to have more responsibility in the house,
True in our house. We have four children. Go ahead. Go on next. Okay, more responsibility. Our oldest is probably, more responsible? No, he's not more responsible. Definitely
is
not.
Is Zach not
the most
smartest?
Responsible. from the point of view of his ability to actually charm people, he is the most charming.
Oh, he's very charming.
There's no doubt about it. He is the most charming.
Dee Dee is a med school student.
Dee Dee is in med school, but Zach's getting an MBA, you know, at University of North Carolina. I mean, he's an MBA. He's working in the Brazilian embassy.
Yeah.
He's gotten some great jobs. No, he's bright, but I think they would both agree that either Dee Dee or Eli were academically brighter. So
you don't buy this study at all?
Not in the least. I don't buy it. No, I don't buy the study in the least. I think it's interesting that I don't know what they're sampling. I don't think they're sampling intelligence. They may be sampling the ability to take the test. That's a different thing than intelligence.
Yes, it is.
In other words, firstborn may sit down and attend to the test better, but I don't think that means that they are brighter.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. A listener now in Caldwell, Idaho. Hi.
Hi.
What were you in birth order in your...
I was first.
Ah, you're the smartest. Then.
Are you the smartest?
Oh, there's no question.
There's no question. And are you Norwegian?
I am not Norwegian.
Okay, thanks.
How can we help you?
Well, I have a problem with what I consider a bronchial cough, a kind of itchy sort of thing that is seems way down in my lung or deep in my throat that caused me to cough, especially when I get in air conditioning.
You got to quit smoking.
I have never smoked in my life.
Oh.
History of asthma?
No.
So you get this cough when you go from hot weather into cold weather. What about in the winter? I mean, from a warm outside to air conditioning. In the winter, do you get it the opposite way, from cold outside to warm inside?
No. It just seems to be this itching down in my... it seems like I keep thinking bronchial.
Yeah, but it may not be bronchial. A couple other questions. Hot food, does it bother you?
Food in general, mayonnaise and seems like carbonated things give me a lot of phlegm.
A lot of phlegm. Okay, good point. A lot of phlegm. I think that this is not from your lungs.
Uh-huh.
I think this is from your tummy. It's called GERD, gastroesophageal reflux disease, and it's where the stomach acid kind of bubbles up into the esophagus. And I'll tell you why. There is some very good research that people with chronic coughs, many of them who don't have a history of asthma, are non-smokers, don't have problems, actually have acid that goes up into the bronchial tree and causes enough irritation to produce a chronic cough or hoarseness. And I'll give you the perfect example. Me, a number of years ago when I was drinking excess coffee, I love coffee, but I was drinking too much of it. I didn't really notice it. I mean, I would just be drinking it through the day. And I developed hoarseness, and I developed a vocal cord nodules. Went to my favorite ENT doc. He said, gee, I'd just like to remove those nodules. Let's make sure they're not cancer. I said, wait a minute. I don't smoke cigarettes. I don't chew tobacco. He said, yeah, but I could just take those nodules off. But I can't, because I can't do surgery anymore. I've got some polio, post-polio syndrome. I'll send you to another doc, and he'll do it. And I said, okay, I'm going to have surgery. I don't want my voice changed. That's the way it goes. I went to the other doc. This is a number of years ago, and he said, wait a minute, I just went to a conference that said these nodules may be caused by acid disease. I said, wait a minute, I can eat anything. My stomach is a lead tin. I like hot food. I stopped my coffee for a month. I took Prilosec, which is over-the-counter, 20 milligrams daily. I upped it to 40 milligrams daily, and lo and behold, 6 weeks later, my hoarseness went away, and my vocal cord nodules disappeared. And then I noticed something even more. I tend to have a chronic cough, which I thought may be due to the fact that I lived with my mom and dad and grandpa, who smoked like chimneys, a little cloud in the house, for the first 20 years of my life. And I smoked for 3 years, and I thought I have a little asthma. I take an inhaler on and off. It wasn't that at all. It's that I have no stomach pain at all. My stomach is just like a tin now, but it's from acid.
You know, I made a doctor's appointment. I'm actually going to a doctor today. Think about this.
I just wanted to ask Zorba, why would the air conditioning flare this up?
Well, what happens is when you go from hot weather to cold weather, it does make your bronchial tubes change slightly. And so what happens is if they're hyper irritable from the acid, they'll just be more responsive. In other words, that's the reason behind that.
Okay.
But I want to tell you something.
Good.
You're going to see a doctor today.
Yeah.
You could change that appointment and do it in a week or two since you've noticed it. We may have been saving you a copay or a doctor's visit. Just want to mention that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the call. So how many doctors are you trying to put off?
Well, he can put it off for a week or two, and if it doesn't go away, then he can go see his doctor. Hey, hang one up for us. Maybe he'll send us the copay.
Why not?
No. Public send radio. It to public radio station.
Yeah, public radio.
He should send it to his public radio station.
800-462-7413. To a listener in El Paso, Texas now. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Well, my husband broke his foot a few weeks ago. Someone stepped on him really hard. Mm. And when he went to the doctor, they gave him an x-ray. He broke the outer bone by the pinky toe. And they put a cast on him, and a week later they said, you know, there's a 20% chance of his healing, so we could either leave the cast on, see what happens, or have surgery. My husband did not want to keep the cast on, so he cut it off himself, and he's just wearing really tight shoes. And I'm just wondering if there's any other option other than a cast or surgery.
Hmm.
I want to know how it happened. Somebody stepped on his foot really hard. Was this like one of those teenage boy things?
No,
you know,
no.
I remember standing in the line in seventh grade, and my friends thought, did you do this, Tom? Thought it was funny, and we would stamp on each other's foot.
I've never stamped on
I don't believe that, Tom.
He was at a very adolescent thing where he was at a festival outdoors, and a mosh pit opened up in front of him, and some guy stepped back onto his foot, and the guy weighed probably 300 pounds.
No, wait a sec. How old is your hubby?
He's 29.
He's 29, and he was going into a mosh pit, and some guy stepped back. I love it.
I told him that. I said, don't you know how old you are? But he doesn't want to know how old he is.
Don't you know how old you are? There you go. Okay, so most of these heal. Most of these heal and most of these do not need a cast. So a lot of these, what you do is you protect it. You protect it with just what you're doing, a tight-fitting shoe. Sometimes we actually give what's called a post-op shoe, which is this shoe with sort of a wooden platform that they walk on. The whole idea is you do it, but you protect the shoe. You protect the foot, rather, so that the foot is not painful. So there's a good chance that he will heal and he does not need a cast. Many of these can be treated without a cast. Now, I'm not looking at the x-ray, and there'll be doctors. I always get emails and I'll say, how can you make this diagnosis without an x-ray, and what are you doing? But the fact is, I would not go for the surgery at all initially. If it doesn't heal, that's a different issue. But most of these can be treated conservatively that way by simply protecting it. Another option is to actually go on crutches for a few weeks, but on the whole, then your leg becomes weaker and your foot becomes weaker. So I would walk. Is he walking without pain?
He is. And when he first got it, before he went to the doctor, he was limping around, but after he had the cast for a while and got it off, and he cut it off,
right,
it's been a lot
right.
better.
Well, anyone who goes into a mosh pit, by law, is allowed to cut off their cast.
Yes, I'll let him know that you said that. I don't know why.
Yeah, that has been decreed that it is allowed to do it. Now, the main thing is he should not walk barefoot around the house. Does he walk barefoot around the house?
No.
Good.
No, he doesn't.
You said that in a very definitive way. Make sure he does not walk barefoot around the house. And if he does, what you do is you bring a little shoe behind him and say, honey, put on this shoe. The reason is you really don't want that bone to wiggle. So when he literally gets out of bed, puts his shoe on, when he goes into the shower, obviously he takes his shoe off. Yeah. But that's the only time that the shoe should be off. He should have a nice, tight-fitting, comfortable shoe with lasts. The lasts are the things you pull on a shoe. Make sure they're wide enough so there's not too much pressure on there. And it will take 6 weeks to heal.
Shouldn't he stay out of mosh pits for a while?
Yeah, he should stay out of mosh pits. That's exactly
it. I'll let him know that you said that because he doesn't listen to me about that.
Yeah, no. Mosh pits and electric bulls. You know those bulls?
Well, let me tell you, the week before he was climbing a basketball pole and he hurt his back. So I think he...
Doesn't he know his age?
No! He doesn't, but thank you for your help.
Sure, thanks a lot for the call. Speaking of feet, Zorba, let's take some time here to help out Carolyn in Richland Center, Wisconsin. She writes, I'm a waitress and on my feet 10 to 12 hours a day, 5 to 6 days a week. Several months ago, my friend suggested I try compression hosiery. Now my legs feel so wonderful. I feel like wearing this type of hosiery almost 24/7. But we're taught something that feels this good must be bad for us. Is there a health or medical risk if I do this?
Well, first of all, I want to discuss this puritanical attitude. I mean, it's been here since the 1600s, and it's time to get rid of it. If it's good, it must be bad for us. Where did that come from? You know, if something's good, it may actually be good for us. Like, get rid of the pain, enjoy life, have a little sex, enjoy your food.
Hair shirt society, aren't we?
Hair shirt society. You got it, baby. A hair shirt society. No, compression stockings, that's what they're called, compression stockings. Yeah. For some people, they're great. For people on their feet, they're wonderful. You can buy, inexpensive ones. You can buy expensive ones called, a little bit more expensive, called TEDS, T-E-D-S. Mm-hmm. Yep. And then you can buy ones that are actually custom-made that are very expensive, very good for people who actually have significant medical problems. And what they do is they keep the veins on the lower legs from filling up. That's what they do. Mm-hmm. And if you have varicose veins or you have veins that, fill up because you're standing up during the day, not walking, you're standing, because when you stand, the blood pools in the veins. When you walk, that's how you get the blood out of the veins. So for stander uppers, it's great.
There's no danger of overuse?
No downside at all. You can wear them. People tend not to wear them when they're sleeping at night. They don't like them. And there's no reason to wear them because when you're flat on your back, you really don't need that compression stocking. But yeah, compression stockings are great. And the downside is there are a couple of downsides. In hot weather, they're very hot. People don't like that. And for people who have trouble bending over, you have a little arthritis bending over, they have trouble getting those compression stockings on.
But there's no risk.
No downside,
risk.
No risk. Get rid of the hair shirt attitude and enjoy life.
Carolyn, too much Zorba pester on your health is never a bad thing either. Keep those questions, comments, and tips coming. Just send them in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Lots more of your questions coming up. Some more research, our medical myth buster. But first, our recipe. We will be welcoming in to our studio Marie Baker from Dodgeville, Wisconsin, who will put together a delicious ice cream recipe. That's next here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. And we welcome you once again to Zorba's Family Kitchen, in which, in this setting, is Marie Baker from Dodgeville, Wisconsin. Marie, hi.
Hi, how are you today?
We're both fine, and we're happy to have you with us. Marie's Chocolate Tofu Ice Cream. You're a listener. You must know how I feel about tofu.
I know, and I really humbly apologize.
Now, am I actually going to have to eat some of this tofu ice cream? I am, aren't I?
Yes, you are, Tom. Of course he has to eat some. Don't you think he has to eat some?
It could change my mind about tofu.
Well, yes, it could change your mind about tofu. How did you get into tofu ice cream? How did you decide to do this?
Well, I am a vegan. I've been a vegan for a long, long time, like 25 years. And so I love to cook and I love to experiment with cooking.
Oh.
And so this offers a wonderful challenge. And so tofu was a great possibility.
And for some of our listeners who do not know about vegans, a vegan is a vegetarian who has no dairy products at all, among other things. No dairy products. Nothing.
Right.
Nothing from an animal. No eggs, no dairy products, nothing that comes from an animal at all. So that means we're stuck with soy.
Soy it is.
Soy it is. I love it.
But Tom, out of compassion for you, I've made this recipe a little different today.
Oh, how so?
It has only half tofu and half coconut milk.
Oh.
So that will help it be a little more palatable for your taste.
Thank you so much.
That's all right.
Really, I appreciate that.
You're very
so
welcome.
Let's look at what we have with the ingredients. Okay. We start out with 1/4 cup of cocoa powder.
1/4 cup of cocoa powder.
Okay. 25 ounces of silken tofu.
25 ounces of silken tofu.
That's right. That's right. I noticed that it's hard for you to even get out the word tofu when you say silken.
Yeah.
So it's got to be silken tofu,
What's
right?
the difference yes. between tofu and silken tofu?
Some tofu is more firm than others. The silken tofu has a very creamy kind of a texture.
Oh. So we're talking consistency.
Yes. And also, this is basically just two of those little aseptic packs of tofu.
Right. So tablespoonful of vanilla.
A big tea vanilla.
Okay, 1 teaspoon of stevia.
A little tea of stevia.
Now, stevia is very popular from a plant, I believe, that's grown in South America.
Yes,
yeah.
And I brought in a sample for you from my garden.
Steve,
you can taste it. A couple of the leaves are a little dark on the top because they were in my freezer container.
Oh, my gosh, it's sweet.
Yes.
Well, that's the
point, growing
right?
it in my garden.
My goodness. Taste it. It is a sweet plant. I have never tasted stevia. I have tasted stevia.
That's very good.
I've tasted the powder, but I have never tasted. Does it grow like basil? Is it very easy to grow?
It's very easy to grow. But
how do you like it?
It's tropical. So,
you have to
protect it from frost.
But Wisconsin is not tropical.
No, but you just grow it in the summer.
You grow it in the summer. I love it. Okay. 1 teaspoon of stevia, 1/4 cup of sugar.
1/4 cup of sugar.
And 1/4 cup of a banana.
1/4 cup of a banana.
Now, one of the things you can do, and this will be on the recipe on our website, is you can substitute 2.5 cups of coconut milk and 1/2 cup of whipped tofu for the silken tofu. And that makes a slightly different taste. That'll be on
there. And that's what we're having this time.
No, we're having half tofu and half coconut milk today.
Half, yeah.
So in other words, you can mix and match this, which is perfect.
Gotcha.
So let's now put it together and how we make it. So place the bowl from the ice cream maker. You got to put it into my ice cream maker in the freezer overnight, and this eliminates, very importantly, the need for extra ice or salt during the freezing process. So the bowl is ice cold when you take it out in the morning.
Can I scoop some of this up while you're doing that?
Absolutely.
Because I'm not the least bit interested in
it. Actually, I think Marie should scoop some of this up. I mean, come on, it's her recipe. She should be the one who helps scoop this up. Okay, so place all the ingredients into a blender or a food processor and blend it until smooth. Then transfer this to a pitcher and refrigerate to chill at least 1 hour. So you put it in the refrigerator, right? To chill it. Do you usually put it in? Can you put it in for longer?
Oh, sure. You could put it in overnight.
Do you do that? Do you put it in overnight, make it the night before?
Sometimes.
And do that?
Sure.
Yeah. So place the frozen ice cream maker bowl into the ice cream maker. Start the rotation. Add the mix to the bowl while it's rotating to start the process about 25 minutes. And then it's cold and you can enjoy it.
So we have some strawberries to put on.
Well, let me have the strawberries on there. We've got some
coming right up.
Fresh strawberries because this is strawberry time. Now, I'm not going to taste it first. I'm going to let Tom taste it first because I know I'm going to taste it. He's not ready.
There you go.
Oh my gosh.
Your strawberries.
This is delicious. I bet you cannot tell this is made with tofu.
Let me see.
I bet you can't tell. Well,
that's very good.
Can you tell this is made with tofu?
Let me try just without the strawberry.
You're eating the whole thing, Tom.
That's excellent.
You cannot tell this is made with tofu. This does not taste like tofu.
No, I would never know.
This does not taste like tofu. You would say taste this ice cream. It may not taste like his standard
ice cream.
I do taste
the coconut. You can taste the coconut. Mm.
This is scrumptious.
Wonderful.
Very good.
Oh, I'm so glad you like it.
Oh, delicious.
Mm. Thank you.
Do you put it into a standard electric ice cream maker? Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, I made this with an electric ice cream maker, which uses no salt or ice.
I have an old-fashioned one that you have to hand crank. I never use it. I use
it
once every 10 years.
Yeah.
Of course it takes too much work.
But this has strawberries. You could use other fruit with this.
Right.
This is absolutely delicious. And what's really neat is that if we look at a serving, it's 250 calories. It's very, very low fat, only 4 grams of fat, which is 6% of what you need. It's actually high in protein. One serving has a whopping 35 grams of protein. It has 72% of the protein you need in the day.
Wow.
For 250 calories. I want to tell you something very interesting. When we look at protein, the highest protein sources tend to also be the highest fat sources. It's a big issue because protein and fat tend to follow one another.
Yeah,
they certainly do
in
animal. Not at all. We have 250 calories, we have low fat, and we have high protein. You know what? This is nutritious. This and is delicious. A dynamite.
And delicious. And,
hey, it's the first time you ever said that a tofu recipe is delicious. Way to go. Thank you, Marie.
Thank you, Marie. Thank you very much.
You, I'm so glad you like it.
Of course, for sharing this recipe, Marie, you get a free copy. Let me hand it to you now of our cookbook.
Oh, wonderful.
Our healthy, low-fat, guilt-free, and tasty recipes from the kitchen of Zorba Pastor.
Thank you.
If you want to enter our recipe contest, it's easy. Just email your original low-fat recipe to us at
Zorba@WPR.org.
For today's recipe, send a stamped, self-addressed, business-sized envelope to Zorba Pastor on Your Health, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706.
Or you can get it on our website or a podcast of it at ZorbaPastor.org.
(800) 462-7413 is our toll-free number, 1-800-462-7413. Zorba, a listener with us now in Belding, Michigan. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
I have a question concerning my ear.
Your ears?
Yes. I have problems. I've had chronic ear infections my entire life, but I have a plugged eustachian tube, and I'm wondering if there's any way that I could get that undone, you know, unplugged without having to go to an ENT and having them vacuum out my head.
And then vacuum out your head.
And that didn't work out so well?
No, it works just fine. It's just very unpleasant.
Yeah.
And so you've gone to ENT docs, and what have they done? Have they actually punctured the eardrum and taken out fluid? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, they had the tubes in when I was little.
When you were little, right.
Yes. The hole never closed, so they never had to do that. They had to just go in there and clean it out with the big vacuum.
So there's been a problem. If you know, it's unpleasant. You have ringing in the ears and you don't hear correctly. What kind of symptoms do you have?
Well, the only symptom I really have, because I've had ear infections for so many times that it doesn't hurt anymore, I have a drainage issue.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
I went to my regular doctor, and he said that my eustachian tube was plugged, and I have to go to an ENT to get it undone.
Okay. Well, let me talk a little bit about this tube thing, because it's an issue, and it's an issue with all of us have had it at one time or another when we've had a cold. You know, we have a cold, and all of a sudden our ears, we don't hear correctly, and we sound like we're in a tunnel, or we're in, you know, in a barrel, and we have tinnitus ringing in our ears. And this is when the tube between the nose and the ear, called the eustachian tube, and this is a ventilation tube is what it's called, and it's to keep the pressure in the middle ear consistent with the pressure outside. And it's a tiny little tube. And when we get allergies, infections, and other things, this tube can swell up, and it's really, really small, and it collapses. And when it collapses, our eardrum doesn't move properly, and we get this full feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it doesn't work because there's fluid in the ear, but most of the time it's just sort of a collapsing of this little tube. And one of the treatments that sometimes works, not always, is a steroid spray, allergy-type spray with prescription, Flonase, Beconase, Nasonex. There are a bunch of them on the market. Get the cheapest one that your insurance pays for. And a couple sprays in that nostril daily, you know, once or twice or three times daily, can often relieve the pressure, decrease the inflammation in the tube, and you're done. You know, you're out of there, and it works. And if that doesn't work, sometimes a course of oral steroids such as prednisone for a week or 2 weeks can get rid of it. I would try that first to do that. Now, there's an old-fashioned remedy called a Palazzi tube, and I'm sure I'm mispronouncing it. When I first started practice, old Dr. Kellogg, who came to the office in 47, used to use these. And these were tubes you'd put into somebody's nose, and they had a red bulb, and they would put pressure up the... Tom is making this terrible face.
You squeeze the bulb.
And it would be like blowing your nose. It would pressure up the tube. Yeah. And he would have little kids would come in the office when I first started practice, and he'd shove this up their nose and squeeze it back and forth while they were screaming. And this was a known... This was old Dr. Kellogg's recipe for trying to open the tube. But that was an old remedy that they used in the 30s, and some people still use it. It's either called a Palazzi or Palazzi. And I actually looked for this on eBay about a year ago and found that these things sell for about $20 or $30. Mm-hmm. And you put this nose in there. What it does is it pops the ear back and forth instead of blowing your nose, you know, to pop your... But that's what I would do. Prednisone, steroid spray, oral prednisone, or this Palazzi tube. I do that before I'd have them vacuum out my head.
Okay, thank you for taking my call.
Sure, you're welcome. 800-462-7413. Zorba, let's jump out to the West Coast to help out Jim in Spokane, Washington. Jim writes, I'm on the top of the list to donate a kidney to my mother. I'm completely fine with the idea of giving up the kidney, but what does bother me is being knocked unconscious. Is there anything that can be done in advance to find out how I'll react to anesthesia? Please help. This is causing me sleepless nights, and my wife says I'm getting grouchy.
Sleepless in Spokane.
Yes.
Sounds like a movie to me. You know, that's a common thing. About 5% of the population, last time I read it, 5 or 7% have a fear of being put under. You know, something's going to happen.
Well, that's not an illegitimate fear.
Absolutely, it's not an illegitimate fear. And although anesthesia is much safer than it was even 10 years ago, mm-hmm. 20 years ago, 30 years ago, you know, there still is a risk. And you can compare the risk. You can say, well, you know, the risk of my dying on the way to the hospital is much, much greater than my risk of dying of anesthesia. That's true. Mm-hmm. It helps on a rational basis, but it does not help on an emotional basis. I think that when you have a fear of something, the best way to do it is through education. So one of the things to do, since he's at the top of the list, is go to the hospital where he's going to have that and meet with one of the anesthesiologists. Talk about it to the anesthesiologist. Learn about the anesthesia, what's going to be used. You know, tell the anesthesiologist that you're fearful of this. There are medications that you can take prior to it that actually help your anxiety. They're great. In other words, they're pre-op pills so that you're relaxed at the time you have the anesthesia.
They make you want to have the operation. Oh, boy.
Yeah, put me under. I can't wait. Take out all my organs. Yeah. I feel so good. Yeah. But seriously, what it does is it's sitting down, talking with the anesthesiologist, that's the best bet.
Yeah. And Jim, tell your wife she's really lucky. My wife has been living with a grouchy person for 27 years. So a little bit of grouchiness isn't going to hurt her. There's never anesthesia involved when you donate your tips, comments, and questions. Just send them in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
And we have lots more coming up. Some more research. We have our medical myth buster and more of your questions here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI. Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Question for Zorba? Here's the number to call. 1-800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, some research. This on diabetes and ethnicity.
That's right. You know, one of the issues that we have is we have sort of ideas of what cause disease, what do not cause disease. And we think of Americans as we're kind of all the same. And, you know, obviously we have different ethnic backgrounds. Mm-hmm. But, you know, equal opportunity for growth, equal opportunity to make money, and equal opportunity to get sick.
Yeah.
Right? To have disease. But it turns out there's some interesting issues that are coming out with our children that are completely sort of different from necessary what I would expect.
So some ethnic groups are more at risk than others?
Well, we have type 1 and type 2 diabetes.
Okay.
Type 1 diabetes is typically called juvenile diabetes. Mm-hmm. It's insulin. It's when Banting and Best first discovered insulin, it was the issue. Children become diabetics, and they would die very quickly until insulin was essentially invented and discovered back in the 1930s. It changed the life of the type 1 juvenile diabetic who does not survive without insulin injections. Type 2 diabetes is the diabetes that we always associated with maturity. Maturity onset diabetes is what it was called. And it occurred in the older person, the older adult, more obesity, less exercise, and so on.
So what's this research?
Well, this research shows, first of all, type 2 is increasing in children. That's the first part. It shows that type 1 is much more likely to occur in whites and Caucasians, and type 2 is much more likely to occur in blacks, in Hispanics, in Indians, and in Pacific Islanders. And there's a difference now between the ethnicity of type 1 and type 2 diabetes and a difference in the way we treat
this. Do we have any idea why this is?
Well, we're not exactly sure. Now, type 1 diabetes, very interestingly, is increasing worldwide. And the theory right now is that the body develops cell antibodies which then knock out the pancreatic cells that produce insulin, and that this basically is an infectious process that occurs early on. Type 2 diabetes is associated with obesity, lack of exercise, and so on. We never, ever saw it in 15-year-olds and 20-year-olds. I never saw it for years, and all of a sudden we're seeing it like that. And that may be related more to opportunity to exercise, to eat fresh fruits and vegetables, and thereby to be, less obese. But the issues are diabetes of both types now are increasing in our children, and what do we do about it?
And what do we do about it?
Well, one of the things that we do about it, with type 1, we're not sure what to do. With type 2, we know they should exercise more, they should eat better, and so on. With type 1, we have to have more surveillance to find out precisely what's going on. But overall, if we really want to keep the health of our children better, it's important to get them to exercise more and do more and to get rid of all the risk factors for diabetes.
1-800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And a listener now, Zorba, in Wichita, Kansas. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
I love the show. Zorba, your energy is fantastic. There's only one other person I know, and that's on a radio station out in San Francisco who enlivens me the way you do.
Thank you. With
your energy and your voice.
Great.
I happen to be a PhD truck driver. PhD truck driver, one of those who loves NPR and loves listening to you guys. I've got a problem with my right shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
When I get off the road and I get home, I play racquetball with my friends, and I've done something. I had injured it a number of years ago with a fall where I had jammed my elbow arm up into the front of the socket. Now I have on the backhand upward stroke.
Yeah.
When I was playing, I'd gotten some pains, and I thought, well, I'll exercise my way through it. And I was finally advised, no, the thing to do is to rest it and ice it. And so it's been improving, but it's been like a month, and I still have some pain over the top of the outside of the arm and where I'm told the tendon is. And I'm wondering, are there any natural things I could take, glucosamine, anything like that, and what would be good, gentle exercises I could do that would be, or should I really be totally resting it, for an extended period of time?
Does it hurt when you're not playing racquetball?
Yes, it's interesting. I can sleep on my stomach with my arm up or down, and it's fine, but if I sleep on my back or I sleep on my left side, just seems to cause some discomfort.
Right. Well, what happens is when you've got an overall term would be shoulder impingement syndrome, where basically you've got some swelling of the muscles, the tendons, the nerves. They push on the nerves, which then fire and then produce this sensation of pain. And one of the issues before one even looks at surgery, which is sort of way down the line, is to look at the activity that you're doing wrong. So, if you're going to play racquetball, because clearly it's a racquetball-related activity, one of the things you want to do is go to a coach and say, what am I doing wrong? Am I doing something wrong? It may just be that racquetball itself is wrong, but quite probably it's the way you're playing racquetball may be part of the issue. The second part of the issue along with it is then going to a physical therapist and saying, what can I do to strengthen my rotator cuff and other things? And they give you these rubber bands called TheraBands, T-H-E-R-A, like therapy, bands, B-A-N-D. And they're kind of like these big rubber bands. They give you these exercises where you can progressively improve those muscles that need to be improved so they can take away some of the work. And if they take away some of the work, usually the pain gets better. So those are the kind of things they do. Sometimes people don't get better and they actually need to have arthroscopic surgery to sort of open things up. But that's after the therapy fails. I'm sorry, Tom.
He asked about supplements, anything that he could take.
Glucosamine, chondroitin sulfate, they may do something. I've not been impressed with them, certainly with shoulder pain. They may work for arthritis. That's around, but that's the inflammation that's there. And sometimes, by the way, an injection of steroid into that spot or into the shoulder joint can get this thing to cool down. One or two injections of steroid can also sometimes do wonders for this. So anti-inflammatories, if you can't tolerate it, some Tylenol. Go to a physical therapist who do that. Go to a coach and find out if you're doing something wrong, how to do it right, and consider an injection. Those all come. There are lots of things you can do for shoulder problems. And I know it's a pain in the shoulder. You know, when you're on there and you're driving, it's got to be very uncomfortable because you're using your shoulder when you're working.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. I guess and a couple of injections of steroids. I'm one of these people who tries to avoid medication when I can. But a couple of injections of steroids isn't going to make me grow hair on my face, huh?
No, it won't. It won't change you. So,
thank you so much.
Thank you very much. We appreciate the call. Zorba, let's get to our medical myth buster now. Today's myth will be a big hit with fans of our ice cream recipe. It's been said that if you eat ice cream too fast, that you'll get brain freezes. Is this true? Do our brains really freeze?
Of course our brains don't freeze.
What kind of
myth is this? Do our brains really freeze?
What?
I wondered that when I was a kid. I wondered, oh, my God, my brain. Do you remember talking about brain freezes?
No.
Oh, gosh. Well, I was at that time. My dad was in the ice cream business.
I mean, you get a little headache thing.
No, I have had their ice cream headaches. And what this is, there's something called, it's actually the technical medical term is sphenopalatine ganglioneuralgia. And here's what happens. In the top of your mouth, I mean, put your tongue to the top of your mouth. What happens is when you put a lot of ice cream quickly in the top of the mouth, it then produces vasoconstriction. In other words, the blood vessels, you know, constrict. So they're not carrying that cold to the rest of the body. And following that immediately in between gulps, you have something called vasodilatation. And what happens is it massively dilates the arteries right around there. And this massive dilatation within the arteries then basically stresses and activates the greater and lesser palatine nerves. This is on the test time, so you've got to memorize this. Greater and lesser palatine nerves. They sense the pain and it goes to the trigeminal ganglia. And what happens is the same nerve that essentially is involved in a toothache is involved in the ice cream headache.
Oh, really?
That's what happens. It's actually the same nerve in the part of the brain that's stimulated. Everybody knows a toothache is awful. People hear a drill and they think of a dental drill and they scream and they run away from it. So basically, it's the same nerve, which is a very, very unpleasant nerve.
Yeah.
And it can be very, very unpleasant. Your brain doesn't freeze, but the nerve does get involved.
But not unpleasant to everybody. You know, Brad Kohlberg, our technical guy.
Yeah, I know Brad.
Radio technical people, they're a little different than the rest of humanity.
Odd folk.
Brad actually tries to do this on purpose when he eats ice
cream.
Really?
He tries to get
a brain freeze.
You mean because he likes to have the brain freeze? he goes with the pain. You mean sort of like the sadomasochistic part of Brad.
Go figure.
I love it.
Don't freeze up on sending us your myth. We'll try to bust it or prove it right. Just send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413 is our telephone number. And a listener with us now in St. Augustine, Florida. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, what's up?
Well, when I was about 16 or 17, I was diagnosed with polycystic ovaries with a sonogram. And the doctor just said, you know, to go ahead and prescribe the birth control pill. And so I was on that until I was about 21. And then after college, I was really interested in not being on it just because I just felt like it just wasn't necessary for where I was at that point. But now I'm 32 and am looking to get pregnant in the next year and just kind of wanted to know if there's any new information out there about polycystic ovaries and how to get pregnant. Basically.
Now, polycystic ovaries means that if we look at your ovary, it has cysts on it. That's where it comes from, and it can be associated with a number of things, including decreased fertility. I mean, that's one of the issues that are there. What I always recommend for anyone with polycystic ovaries is for a woman to link herself up with someone who is a good, and I'm assuming they're always, not every OBGYN is good, like not every doctor is good, mm-hmm. OBGYN who is comfortable dealing with the hormonal issues involved with polycystic ovary syndrome.
Okay.
And also with an endocrinologist who might also be very interested in that. And that's the team you want. You want an endocrinologist on one side and an OBGYN sort of fertility specialist. They're usually involved in fertility issues. And I don't mean that they're involved in artificial insemination, which is a totally different issue, but an OBGYN, there's some OBGYNs that do much more fertility than others, and that's what you want. An OBGYN where she or he does fertility, and then probably an endocrinologist. And you're 32. This is the time to do it.
This is
you've been together how long with your hubby?
It's been a year.
Does he want to have kids?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so this is when you want to start because you're at the end of, basically when we look at fertility, it ends at 40. At 35, it becomes more difficult, but it ends at 40. So this is a logical time to do it because you want to start to develop normalized type cycles and you want to know when you're more likely to get pregnant. And then you want to try to have sex during those times that you can get pregnant. So
Okay, I will do that.
Yeah, good luck with it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for the call.
You know, this brings up, Tom, a lot of issues with fertility. When we look at women of childbearing potential, it was very, very common, of course, going back 100 years ago, a woman often got pregnant to the age of 19, 20, or 21. And the average age of fertility in the U.S. and Western Europe when a woman first gets pregnant has moved up to 26 to 28. That's about 50% of the women get pregnant in their mid to late 20s. Now, they're having fewer children, mm-hmm. but what happens is women who have fertility issues don't always realize them until later on, and then the number of years they have where they can get pregnant is reduced. And had they known these fertility issues earlier, they might decide they want to get pregnant sooner.
Yeah. Interesting. Before we go, Zorba, let's help out Marty in Branson, Missouri. Marty says he's been drinking V8 since it was invented, but he's not so sure about their claim that one glass is equal to your daily requirement of vegetables. He needs your take.
Basically, a glass of juice is a serving of veggies.
Yeah.
That's what it is, no matter what the juice is. And it's not two or three or four or five servings of veggies unless you're eating five servings of juice. Now, a glass is 6 ounces. I'm talking about a juice glass. So mm-hmm. if you have a 12-ounce bottle of V8, you are having two servings of V8. That's basically what you're having. And that's good. So having that amount of V8 is a great idea.
But it's not your whole daily requirement.
It's not your whole daily requirement. I'm sorry, Marty. You cannot get by with one glass of V8 and make that your fruits and veggies for the day.
It only takes an hour to get your weekly requirement of Zorba Pasture on your health. So come back and join us next week. Zorba, see you next week.
A pleasure, Tom.
For all things Zorba, including our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at zorbapastor.org.
Don't forget, you can bug our producer anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's produced by Adam Friedrich. Our executive producer is Charles Monroe Kane. Brad Brain Freeze Kohlberg is our technical director, and Gigi Holland fills your recipe requests. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll be with us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0719Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.